Okay.
You have questions. Find your answers at starspsychics.com.
Hello, I'm Natalie, owner of starspsychics.com. I am dedicated to providing affordable access to spiritual advisors. Here are two satisfied clients who will tell you what it's like to work with me.
Quoting Jackie.
It's a comfortable site. Everybody is so friendly. They treat you like family.
Barb added this about Natalie.
She's a kind and caring person who gives accurate readings.
You have questions? Find your answers today at starspsychics.com. That's stars with a Z, psychics.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Natalie, also known as Starscast. And I always say that in the beginning because some people really don't know who is Starscast. Who is she? You know, I've had that name, oh my, since when I worked on Crystal Ball in America Online. That's so many years ago. But, anyways, I want to tell you a few little things. I'm going to be working on the magazine. We had some server issues, so I got put behind a little bit today, so that means tomorrow I have to work really hard, but that's okay. I'm used to it. I've got it all down pat. I know what to do. I have my little booklet here, and anytime anybody sends me anything, I write their name down, the date they sent it. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, particular about it because, or I go into my server and do a search, and there they are. And I find all the emails. I have on my server right now about 23,000 emails. You're all laughing, thinking,
wow.
Oh, my God. But you see, I keep them because of my authors that write in. And, you know, you can't remember everything. I mean, you try. But anyways, I'm going to be working on that. And so that's one of my passions. Everybody knows the magazine is my passion. And, of course, we have Stars with a Z, psychics.com, that has been really busy. Things are really picking up. I'm happy to see that. You know, I mean, everybody wants to make money, and those that come on my site, they're on, and sometimes they don't make anything, and yours truly gets real. It bothers me a lot. I know everybody says, well, it's not your fault. Well, it's not my fault, but you know what I'm saying? I'm an empath, and I feel them, and I just want them to stay at home and have their jammies on, their coffee, and sit at the computer and do what they love to do, and that's to share their gifts with you and the tools that they have. Now, for first-time clients, we have, you know, first 3 minutes are free, and then there's another special inside when you open up your account, and you'll see what those are. And we have a mailing list if you'd like to get on it, because down the road we're going to have specials. We're going to have some kind of little games where you can win minutes. And, oh, Tony and I have all kinds of ideas. And, of course, we're close to having the cards up that I had done, not my own personal deck, but the other deck on the App Store, like Google App and iTunes. And we're kind of the guy that's doing it is awesome. And so I have to wait for him to put all of it together and make sure that it runs right, and that will be up there, and I will let everybody know. And, yes, the cards will be for sale. They're beautiful. I mean, I'll start putting something in the magazine about what they look like. The lady is from Spain, and she did a beautiful job. So you're probably thinking, well, Natalie, you've talked enough, which everybody knows I can talk. I want to bring in our beautiful guest tonight. She's quite talented. She tells you everything that she's done, and it's amazing. She's a triracial novelist, a produced playwright, and an option screenwriter. And really, her love for people and life and nature and family is just phenomenal. So I want to bring to you my guest, and her name is Dorothea Bano. Dorothea, how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Can you hear in her voice how nice she sounds? She's so nice on the phone. We were talking about this before that I said your voice is, you're very caring. She's very caring. But I have lots of questions here. And I don't know if anybody calls in and you want to answer their questions, that would be fine. But how did you get on this path? I mean, I know a little bit, but I would like our listeners to hear it right from the very beginning. And this is kind of like a talk. It's not a Q&A. It's not really an interview like you're sitting in a studio with me and I'll say, well, now, Dorothea, what about this? And no, we're going to talk and enjoy it. It's like two ladies having coffee And if you look at her book, I want everybody to go there. You're going to, she did not realize where I was from now. But her book is called Once in a Blue Moon. Pardon me?
Once in a Blood Moon.
Oh, Once in a Blood Moon. Oh, that's a misnomer. I wonder why I said that. Maybe it is a blue moon. Was it a blue moon when you wrote it?
I don't think so. I think this is a blood moon.
Okay, Once in a Blood Moon. And it was Heaven Hill Plantation upriver from Georgetown, South Carolina in 1807. But on the cover of this book, and I didn't even look at the print, I saw this woman, and she's kind of in front of a plantation by a tree. And I thought, wow, it looks like down here. It looks like South Carolina. And lo and behold, and we were just kind of saying, oh, my gosh, how did this happen? Well, we all know, Dorothea, that things happen for a reason, and they come to you when they're supposed to. So let's start at the very beginning with you, when you were young. I mean, did you always want to write?
I actually wanted to write from the time I was 9 years old. I read Little Women. I thought that I was Joe's twin, and I started off with carbon paper, and I don't know if you know what that is. It's very
Oh, I do. You would use it on a regular typewriter to make a copy. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's all we had then, and so I started to write the play of Little Women, and I got 40 pages into it, and that was about all I could handle with all that carbon paper and the smudging and all of that. However, we did produce what I'd written in my backyard. So my grandmother had introduced me to theater. She had been offered a contract on Broadway in the very early 1900s, and her father told her if she accepted it, he would disown her because that was not considered to be a very good profession for a young woman at the time. So she came home, but she instilled in me a love for theater and enrolled me in drama classes when I was 6 years old. So she started me off on theater, and Louisa May Alcott started me out on writing. And I now have 7 granddaughters, 6 of whom are in the performing arts. So it's very exciting.
Isn't that wonderful? That is so wonderful. You know, I've talked to a lot of authors, one opera star, but for the most part, they're authors. And almost, I have to say, maybe 99.9%, they all either wrote poetry when they were really young or they wrote stories. And now they have books.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah, and I bet there's another thing that we have in common. I've noticed, I was in a playwriting class in San Francisco, and the very first day, the instructor asked what I thought was a very intriguing question. He asked, how many people had a trauma in their life before they were 15 years old? And more than half of the students raised their hand. And my father died when I was 6. And that set me on a path to want to do something that would make him proud. And I felt writing was the way to do that. But I think what that does when you have a trauma when you're a child is it disrupts the status quo of things going on, and you see things more clearly because you see things that are right in front of you instead of kind of a shallow look at the world. I don't know if you understand what I mean.
No, I understand. And I bet you if I asked the writer, well, now that I'm thinking while you're talking about the other ones, they had things happen to them when they were young. And I wonder if that triggers something. I wonder if it makes you think out of the box, first of all. And maybe do you go into like maybe a dream world? Like you're trying, not escaping from what's happening, but sometimes things are so traumatic, you don't want to remember them. You want to I want to get away from that, so I'm going to write a beautiful story, and I'm going to feel really good about it, and everybody that reads it is going to feel the same. I wonder, was that you? Did you do that?
No, not exactly.
Okay.
I felt like my father was a hero, and I wanted to write about heroes or heroines and kind of capture the energy that he taught me about. So I think that was my thrust, but also I felt like he was watching over me at the time, and I felt guided until the time I was 13 years old. I felt that I communicated with him inside of my mind. Then when I was 13 years old, I went into my bedroom, and I just sat on my bed to take off my shoes, and then he appeared to me. I wasn't asleep. I was awake. And he appeared to me, and it was my first experience with out-of-body, and I started to rise up out of my body, and he said, I have to go now. And I said, well, I want to come with you. And I was crying and begging him to let me come too. And he said, I have to go, but you have to stay. You have work to do. So when he said I had work to do, then I started, of course, thinking about what work that might be. And writing was what came to me.
Because you wouldn't know. I mean, what kind of work? I mean, what is he talking about, right?
Well, it started you thinking.
Yeah. And what a beautiful man he sounds like. He was so gifted himself, so talented. Okay, so you started writing and all of that, and you saw your father. And some of us are very fortunate to have things like that happen to us. I have. Nobody that I see. I mean, I never had any of my parents or either of my parents. I shouldn't say any. It sounds like I must have had 10 of them. My parents are all. I just or any person per se or animal, but I just hear and or feel. And that's how gifted people are. So gifted in different ways. I mean, some people can do automatic writing. I need to do that with my fairy tale. Sit at the computer, the keyboard, and just type away. But sometimes people will hear, they'll feel, they'll have a sense of smell. My mother always used the perfume Taboo, and she passed away. My parents passed away less than 5 months apart. But anyways, my son came up to me and he said, "Mom, he must have been like eight or nine or something." And no, he was older than that. I take it back. And he said, "Mom, do you smell anything?" And I said, "No." He said, "Come here. Come over, right over here." And I smelled her perfume. He saw her coming up the basement steps. She had this blue duster on. I just remembered this. And he came into me and he said, "Here, you put this away." And he handed me his bottle of whatever he was drinking, Coke or whatever. And I said, "Well, what's the matter with you doing?" And he said, "Oh, I'm not going over there." And I knew right away something happened, or he heard something or something, you know. And so we walked together down this little, it was a short little hall. And I said, "Well, what did you see?" He said, "I saw Grandma coming up the stairs. She had that blue thing on." And I said, Okay, that was probably her. But why was she coming from the basement? I said, "Well, maybe she was looking for something." I had all of her stuff down there, you know, so that's what I said to him. And then I don't know how many days later, I was standing in my kitchen, and I kind of glanced to the right. I was at the counter. I glanced to the right, and I saw that blue duster, a figure walk past the entrance.
Oh,
my. Yeah, so, you know, and I told him. I said, "Well, this is just to tell you that's exactly what it is. That was her." But I never saw her again, and he never saw her again. And he's asked me before. I mean, he's older, and he said, "I wonder why." And I said, "Because it's all you were supposed to see of her. That's what she wanted. She wanted you to know that she was near. That's all. Just a little something for you. You know, maybe he was questioning it a lot, but what you saw your father like that was tremendous. That was a very, very much a gifted experience for you. That's wonderful.
Well, it was pretty profound. And actually, as you're talking, I realized in my novel, Once in a Blood Moon, the protagonist, the main character, her father, well, her father is very wealthy. He's an African-American planter, but he does not own slaves. Whereas her mother, who's also has African-American blood and can pass for a white person, she does own slaves. So in her childhood, Alexandra, the protagonist, has grown up with Lulu, and Lulu is now her servant. So they could play together until they were 10 years old. Then her mother marched into a room on her 10th birthday and said, you've got to start treating Lulu like the person she was meant to be. She's meant to be your slave. And Alexandra was absolutely distraught. So later, when she was 16 years old, she's still treating Lulu like her friend. And her mother threatens to sell Lulu. So Alexandra is completely beside herself. And she's sitting on her bed and she's thinking, now her father and mother have separated. And her father lives in an African-style village on the corner of the plantation grounds. So she decides she's going to sneak out at night and go to where her father is and ask her father to intervene and not let her mother sell Lulu. So she sits on her bed, and this is how it ties into what we've been talking about. And she says, Didi Ma, and Didi Ma is her grandmother who's passed over. Didi Ma, if I'm supposed to go down to the plantation in the middle of the night, could you please give me a sign? So she's sitting there in the middle of her canopied bed, waiting and half hoping she will hear from Didi Ma and half hoping she won't get a sign because that would be pretty terrifying. And so the clock downstairs strikes midnight and she's thinking, well, Didi Ma isn't going to give me a sign. And then she smells the scent of gardenias. And gardenias were the flower that Didi Ma loved so much. And she knew she had her sign from Didi Ma. So you see that wasn't completely off the track because it kind of ties into what we were talking about.
And very spiritual, I might add. All of us, living down here in South Carolina, when we first came down here, we went to see plantations. There was one working plantation. I don't know if it still is or not. But we got to walk, and I was amazed. I mean, I would stop. I was with my family. There was quite a few of us, and they were walking ahead, and I'm back there looking around. I'm thinking, having all these thoughts. I don't even know what I was thinking. Like, how could people live like this, you know? Look what they had or didn't have. And they'd say, well, what are you doing? And I'd say, I'm listening. Well, what are you listening to? I said, anything that anybody wants to say that you guys won't hear. They annoyed me. They did. Yeah, they annoyed me because they didn't get it. They didn't feel it. It wasn't their fault. They didn't feel what the energy was like on that plantation. We went to quite a few of them. The working one was the most unusual one because there were people still walking around and all of that. And then and some made light of it, and it that really annoyed me. And I absorbed everything I could walking around them. And there's quite a few down here. And we have a tobacco farm here, not far from me. I could probably walk to it, where they have tobacco. Isn't that amazing? And it's really funny because living up north, I used to always walk around without my shoes on. And my father said, you should have been born on a farm or in the South. Well, I live in a place called the farm. It's the group of homes that I live in. and I'm in the South. So I did both. I'm sure he laughed when he heard it. Yeah. You need to live on a farm.
So you are.
Well, I am on a farm.
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
no.
subdivision is called The Farm. And you know, of course, he passed away. He didn't know that I did this, but yeah. But there's something about, I have to get your book because I'm drawn to the cover, and there's something there for me, I'm sure, and it is on Amazon, Dorothea. It is
yes.
there. It is there. And it was released May 21st, so that's when it was put on Amazon anyways. I don't know if that was your release date, you know,
it
really.
Was,
but
it was actually the release date was June 11th. Yeah.
There you go.
I'm,
yep.
Yeah.
And that is so, that cover is just makes me feel so good.
Well,
and maybe because I live in the South
cover.
And I've seen those. I've seen those big trees.
Yeah.
The moss.
I cried when I saw the cover. I didn't design it, but the person who did design it captured completely, perfectly what I was trying to say with my book.
Oh, yes, because I haven't read it and I get the feeling of it. Oh, yeah. Yes. It's beautiful, right in front of a plantation there, and she's by this big old tree, and that's what we have down here, these big, huge trees. I have a lot of them. I'm not in a plantation, but I have a lot of them on my lot. I have the most pine trees of anybody in the whole sub, and everybody says, oh, you've got all those stupid trees. They're going to fall during the storm. Oh, come on. I said, they're beautiful. Look at them. See, I'm not like that. I love the beauty. I love everything around me. I love people. I love you, Dorothea. You're very special. I see your picture on the back of the book. But this story has got to be beautiful. It just has to be. With that cover, yes. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy you're going to read it.
And, of course, Helen sent you my way, dear Helen.
Yes.
Yes.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, she, you know, every once in a while, she said, well, I don't know if you really want to interview this one. I said, you know, Helen, I don't really interview. We talk. So long as I have some information about them. She says, well, I know I've listened to your shows. You don't stop talking. And I said, well, you know, I mean, I pull stuff out is what I do. And I said, I'll do it. She sent me another one, and she says, oh, I don't think you're going to want to do this one. I had one man who was, he was a preacher. And she said, well, I don't know. You better read about him a little bit. We hit it off so well. He paid me one of the nicest compliments at the end. He said, you know, Natalie, because we talked about how I pray and everything, you know, and he said, you know, Natalie, I think you pray when you sleep. I said, really?
Oh.
He said, oh, yeah, you do.
Great.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yes, it is.
And
it is.
I said,
it's
well,
wonderful.
Thank you. I said, I probably do. Either that or I'm talking to God and I'm giving him a dissertation about things that I don't like. I'm pretty feisty. Poor God, he has to listen to me every day, but for the most part. I mean, but I'm so loving. You know, I'm so kind and so spiritual and all of that. I will have Helen send me this book. I will. I will get this book. But, okay, so does this have a good ending, this book?
Yes. I think it will be very pleasing to people, but it has a lot of the protagonist faces many, many challenges because she is very wealthy. She plays the violin absolutely beautifully. She's a protege. In her background, her father is a Jola, that is a tribe on the Gambia River in West Africa, and it is said that they developed the Inkoting, which is a stringed instrument that some people believe is the precursor of the banjo, but music is very important to that group, and so music plays a huge role. Alexandra thinks she's going to become a famous violinist. Have you heard of Phyllis Wheatley?
Yes, I have.
Phyllis Wheatley. Yeah, so she's heard of Phyllis Wheatley, the poet, the young woman who was actually a slave, also from West Africa. And her poetry was so stunning that she was invited to go to England and recite a poem for the Queen. So now Alexander's thinking, I'm going to be famous like that. And then racism rears its
ugly
divisive
head.
Hateful
yeah.
head. And and her father's murdered. Her mother dies of consumption. And now she is the heiress of this really prosperous plantation. And she has a target on her back because the racists want to seize the plantation for their own. So she runs for her life and she gets sold into slavery. So I won't tell you any more than that.
No. Wow.
But,
yeah. Well, and your site, we'll mention this a few times, is it's Dorothea. Now you got, and I even typed her name wrong, and she said, "Well, it's Dorothea, not Dorothy." And I thought to myself, "How did you make that mistake?" But I will never make it again. Anyway, and so please forgive me for that. But it's Dorothea, DorotheaBonnea.com. Go there and look at this. The cover of the book. It's the front and the back, and it's even the hues around the plant. Even that whole, that's just exactly what it's like. And if you go,
you can almost feel the humidity, can't you?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and it gets
picture.
Yeah. Now we're going to be in the 70s this week, okay? But come February. Oh yeah, it gets hotter than Hades here. In February or so. The flowers, all the beautiful flowers start blooming. And being from the north, I lived there most of my life, I would never go back to the land of ice and snow. Never. Never. Being here, it's just Carolina mornings are beautiful. They are probably the most beautiful. Florida has beautiful mornings. Oh,
birds.
We have all kinds. We have hummingbirds. We have cranes. We have egrets, we have ducks, my neighbor feeds the ducks, so we've always got these little babies going around. We have deer, little baby deer, little babies. I've gotten some beautiful pictures. If you look on my Instagram, you'll see the little babies right in my front yard. Oh, my goodness, I couldn't believe it. It's very, it's not like city-like. It's kind of rural in its own way,
You can feel the rural part of it. So it probably used to be entirely rural.
It was. It was nothing but, it was just trees and dirt. And there was nothing here. And we have we have a lot of different kinds of trees, but the flowers are just, where are you at, speaking of flowers?
Well, I'm in Davis, California, but I spent my first 6 years in the South, so I have fond memories of that, the softness of the air.
And you can sit outside, people, if you're listening, in February with maybe a little sweater on and have your coffee in the morning. That's no joke. There's no snow. We have had snow. And they kind of panic around here. Well, in Michigan, we had snow plows and salt trucks and all that. I'm watching these people and I'm thinking, you have no idea what it could be like. But but that's rare. That's very rare. And, we get hurricanes. This past season, we were lucky. The year before, and the year before that, we got hit. But nothing. But you know something? I didn't leave the house then. My neighbor did. But then the time before that, the year before that, I left and she didn't. And we pulled away. I was driving with my son and my daughter-in-law was in the other car with my granddaughter. And my son said to me, "You're looking so serious." I said, "Nothing's going to happen to us." And he said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Nothing is going to happen to my house, to Annette's house, and Diane's house." I was in between the two of them. My house was in between. So we leave for like 5 days, which you don't ever want to have to do that, people. Well, living in California, if you have fires and stuff, you know what that's like. You have to leave your home.
Well, yeah. My father was on the rescue squad for the Air Force in Tampa, Florida. He'd go out in hurricanes and rescue people. I know about that and evacuation.
Yeah, and so... Yeah, so, and then you go come back in when they tell you to. Well, we were just lucky. We got in. We weren't lucky. I don't believe in that. We were supposed to. And we drove down the road. We couldn't get down because there was too much water. So I had to stay 2 nights at my son's. But then finally when we were able to come back home, he had a big truck, a big tall truck. And he said, well, what do you think? Well, I said, I'm going to tell you what I think. If there's anything, it's in the garage, on the floor. And that was it. The us three were spared. Across the street, they lost everything in their homes, but it's the wetlands behind their homes. I would never buy there.
Wow.
But it's, you know, so it holds all the water, and it's always got water back there. They lost everything inside. Everything had to be taken out.
My word.
You know, they go up with the walls. It was awful. And I was home, and she was home, and I helped that when the trucks came. Can you feature me doing this? I'm 5'2", right? Okay, you need to come over here, and you need to pick all of this up, and then I got another spot for you. But I got to know them.
Wow.
I was so friendly. I got to know them. And, you know, they come and they wait for me kind of like, well, where is she, you know? And, oh, here you are. Okay, where do we have to go now? What do we have to pick up? I mean, we had everything on the lawns. I only got water in my garage, nothing in my house, nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But I'm also on the highest, I have the highest point in the subdivision. I'm on the highest ground. And when they came out a couple of years ago, this guy, because I had almost like a little sinkhole, and the guy said, come here, watch it. I'm going to show you something. Come walk over here with me. And he said, now turn around and look straight across the street. What do you see? I said, well, I'm a lot higher than they are. And he said, that's exactly right. You have the highest lot. How did you get this? I said, well, it became available. We had the lot next door, and this one became available, and I said, I want that one. Because we have like a lagoon. It's a man-made. It sounds like it's a really nice. It is a nice subdivision, but it's not wealthy or anything like that. I mean, I don't have a mansion. I just have a regular house, you know. But I wanted to be able to look at the lagoons head on, not out of the corner, but straight on, and that's what I got. But you see, the placement of the house was important. It was important for me, Dorothea, because it was a place of protection.
It really was.
We have to put her on high ground. We have to make sure, you know. And I've had a lot of experiences, and I'm only telling you this because you're super spiritual and you understand. But I had a lot of things happen to me in my life, and I'm not gonna. We won't go on the air with them again. I mean, they've all heard them, and they'll say, "Oh, geez, here she goes with her stories." But anyways, let's talk more about you. See, I could just carry on and on and on. We're talking like we've known each other for years, right?
Well, I'd love to know your story, but I wanted to tell you something, though, in regard to trees. I don't know if you've come across this. Recently, scientists have discovered that trees communicate with one another.
Oh, yeah, hold the tree.
Under the ground.
Hug a tree.
Under the
ground. Hug a tree. Yeah.
So it sounds like you communicate with the trees, too.
Well, you know... I love looking at them. It's just if everybody could live in a beautiful place that they would think is beautiful. Now, they could be here and say, oh, God, it's too hot. I don't want to be there. I don't care what you have there. But see, not for me, because I love everything.
Well,
I love the flowers.
Well, it sounds like your
adversity.
Trees. Your adversity has left you loving beauty. That's wonderful.
Yes, I just and I see the good in people. I see the bad, though, too, and I think, God, if I could just turn them around somehow. But, you know, you can't fix everything. That's when I talk to God. Okay, you got to fix this. This is wrong. All of this is wrong. But anyways, when you were writing this, did it take you a long time?
Well, it took me 15 years.
Okay. Why? what took so long? Because you felt you needed more experiences, or what? What was holding you up?
Well, it was a lot of research. But basically what happened was my second cousin, who I'd never met, found me and delivered to me like a 80-page newspaper serialized version about my ancestor, John Fowler. And the title of it is The White Slave. And so it turns out that John had moved from North Carolina to South Carolina when he was a young boy with his family, two brothers, three sisters, his mother and father, in 1806 or 7. His father died. And at that time, the law was the children who were called half orphans if their parent father died became the ward of the state. And he was placed in the slave quarters. And he worked right alongside with the slaves. And they heard him crying for his mother at night. And they wanted to help him go all the way back to North Carolina, 100 miles away. So they devised a way to help John escape. They went into the woods, like the woods near your house. They shot squirrels to make squirrel skin moccasins for his, so that he could protect his feet as he made that journey. And this was before the Underground Railroad. But he made it all the way back up to North Carolina, rejoined his family. His mother had been allowed to take the three daughters, whereas the sons were placed on different plantations, and John made it back. He subsequently had 19 children, 199 grandchildren, and he became a real force for the cause of the Union, for freeing slaves. When he was 50 years old, he moved to Kansas because he wanted to help keep Kansas free. And he became a postmaster, one of the first postmasters there in Kansas. But he was really a dynamic person. So I thought to myself, the slaves have dark skin. They can't escape. And they are helping this little white boy to go back to his family. I was just in awe of their compassion.
Of course. Yes. Oh, yes,
so at the time I was teaching full-time. I'm a drama teacher, producing plays. I also was raising my seven sons. In between raising the seven sons and teaching drama, which is really intense because producing plays takes a lot of time. We would travel, my husband and I would travel to the South Carolina, and I started to do this research that blew me away. And it took 15 years, really, to put it together.
Hmm. Now, what does your husband do now?
He's a criminal defense attorney.
Okay. Ah, okay. Good. Get those criminals. Right?
Well, he helps people with appeals when they feel they've been treated unfairly. So.
Yeah. Well, defense, absolutely, and we need those. But anyways, you know, you don't, I was born and raised in Motown, you know, in Detroit. And
Okay.
Oh, yeah, so I know all about black people, you know, but I had, and then it's really strange, and you don't think about this, and I'm only telling you this because of the book that you wrote, but I ended up working at a, tennis is in my background, I ended up working at a tennis club, a little one, and then I went on to the big one, but the little one had predominantly black there, but I mean, mm-hmm. I was a little white girl, I mean, and that was no joke.
Yeah, I understand.
But the one pro that was there, he really liked me, he thought I was so neat, I was so little, but I was mighty, but I was careful. I mean, because I'm here, I'm around all these women and men that are of color, but he taught me something. He said, he said, I'm going to tell you something about us. And he says, you probably don't even know this. he said, there are two kinds of black people. And I looked at him and he said, so you don't even know, do you? And I said, no. And he told me what they were. He said, now, the second kind is the kind that's not usually educated and they don't care and they're always stealing and all of that. He said, all of them that come here, they were teachers, they were doctors, they were attorneys, they would come and play tennis, right? It wasn't expensive. I got a feel for that. Then, you know, I told my dad, here, my dad, he worked with a lot of black people. He knew so many stories, it was unreal. So you see, I intermingled with all of them. And I tell people that those guys at that club treated me like a little princess. That is no joke. And see, maybe that's why I have a fondness for your book, because I know, I can only imagine, I should say I don't know, I can only imagine what it was like so many years ago. There's a movie out called Harriet. That's a good story. What a brave woman she was, but she started it all. And that's probably what I would have done. But I've had in my background a lot of that interaction. And I'm looking at your book still, and I still get that feeling. The first doctor I ever went to was a black doctor from my uncle knew him. And he's right away said to me, now don't be afraid. And I had pains in my stomach or something, I don't know. I said, I'm not afraid. What are we going to see, a monster? You know, see, I was so open to everything. So he took me in, and this man was so kind. That's the first encounter I ever had. And he was so kind to me. I'll never forget him. But you see, I think in our backgrounds, if we look, and I know there are some people born in the South, and the Southern and the Northern are totally different. I'm going to tell everybody that right now. The Southern people are so different. They are kinder. They care. They're not forceful. Up north, they can be very forceful. They're not. I mean, I was raised in it. I saw it. But I was lucky, Dorothea, that I was surrounded by all these beautiful people, and it kind of helped me to be where I am and what I am right now, open to it all. Just open to it all. You know, some people are so inhibited, I guess. They don't want to give somebody a chance. I'll give you a chance. Don't cross me, but I'll give you a chance. Come on, let's go. You know, come on, you can do it. I probably would have been a good politician. That's what my friend Jackie always tells me. God, you would have been great.
Well,
I didn't know. Somebody probably would have shot me.
Yeah.
Nah, you know. And I think that we're all doing what we're supposed to be doing. But, oh, my goodness, this book, I'm going to say it again, Once in a Blood Moon. Go to Amazon. Look at that cover of this beautiful, she's not real dark, but she's black. And she's got this beautiful white dress on with this shawl, and her hair is braided up. Just so beautiful. And in the distance is a plantation house. That's what it's
well,
like.
She is very dark. She is very proud of her African heritage and of being very dark. And, you know, when I was in the Peace Corps in Tanzania in East Africa, some of the people there had never seen a white person. And the people where I lived in the village felt that the darker your skin, the more beautiful. And we had some funny exchanges. One of them was, this is all in Swahili, but anyway, well, you better not wear red because it doesn't look very good with that pale skin. That's a whole different perspective. And and just the warmth and the willingness to embrace the maternal sense of being a woman. One day my husband had gone out to find a person who lived actually 10 miles away. We had no car. He had to walk. And almost an hour or two after he left, there was a report of lion tracks all around the village.
Oh, wow.
And people were very worried because lions didn't often come close to the village unless they were man-eaters.
Yeah, I was going to say, on the hunt. Yeah, yeah.
So so I was very worried, and it started to get dark. And I went out and looked down the road for him. And in the village where we were, it was a Wagogo village, age is revered. So the older you are, the more status you have, the higher status you have.
More respect,
and the oldest
yes.
woman, the oldest woman in the village came over to me, and she put her arm around me, and she said, "Don't worry, he's going to come back." So I guess she was psychic. But anyway, it was, I just felt her love. It was just extraordinary.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And she
yeah.
appears in my book. She appears in my book as Mamu. So watch out for Mamu.
Oh, sweet. Oh, gosh, I have to read this. I can't wait. I can't wait. Yeah, you know what? Beautiful stories. You know, see, everybody has a story. Everybody can say something. And how you put all of this together in such a beautiful way, really. How did you get this? Was it a, I'm assuming it's a woman that did the cover of your book?
It was actually through Acorn. Acorn Publishers. And the person who read the book really got it. I mean, like I say, I cried when I saw the cover.
Oh, no. It's perfect. It's perfect. That's how I would depict something in the South. Exactly. Just exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if that working plantation is still going. Probably is. But, of course, it's not like it used to be. But... yeah, they, when I was with that, they were relatives, and I just told them to shut up.
No, I know what you mean. You can sense what's gone on there. I had that same experience when we visited plantations. It was, I remember seeing a really, small slave cabin. The door was open, and you could just feel some of the things that must have gone on there. I'm sure
exactly.
That's what you were feeling, too. It's-
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I kept lingering. I was further and further back. And, I mean, I could see them, but I wasn't worried because I was absorbing everything around me. And they were busy talking about this and that. And I'm, oh, God, they're making so much noise. I wish they'd just be quiet because I'm listening. And but it wasn't anything that I planned. That's what happens to me. I don't. Planet. Like, I don't say, well, I'm going to go here and I'm going to see what I get. Nah, it doesn't work that way. Not for me, it doesn't. And, you know, it's just, you have to, your mind has to be a certain way. You have to be really clear to let things come in. This is my method. And if you're not, if you're, you know, bogged down with things and something's bothering you, and right now a lot of things are bothering a lot of people, And all the stress and all the loss of life and all of that, I get that. I really do. And ask me how many times I think about it, that I wish I could fix it. It bothers me a lot. I don't understand why people make things so complicated. Just get the job done, sign that damn paper, pardon my French, and let's get it going. I mean, well, what is this big deal? Yeah, see, that's
yeah.
why she said you'd make a great politician. I said, no, somebody would probably shoot me because I have a big, I would have a big mouth, you know. But I can be really shy. I mean, I used to be really shy when I was a little girl. But, you know, Dorothea, I was absorbing then.
Ah, because you're empathetic. Yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
And I was really smart. I am really smart, but people don't know it. And I was like that in school, so I was quiet. And I was listening, and I was watching, you know. And I would always, I'd help somebody if I saw them struggling. But I didn't know what it was then. All I knew is I was happy doing that. being really quiet and still and looking at everybody and listening and feeling. I really like that. And
you write fairy tales, did you say?
Well, Dorothy, I have this fairy tale. It's actually a love story. It's very beautiful. Yes. But it would be for, it could be for anybody, actually. I mean, anybody, they would, it's to show them that they must believe that, and you'll hear what I say at the end of my show. It's how I am. Nothing is going to happen if you don't believe. All in caps.
Oh, that's
believe.
So interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's a series about this, you know, this young girl, you know, she's going through her life and she's miserable because she knows there's something more for her. She knows. And she knows who it is. It's a man. And but there isn't much she can do about it. But she's spiritual and very gifted and has this ability around animals. I do love animals. In a way, it's kind of about me, I guess. But, you know, I wrote some of it, and my granddaughter read it. And when she was going into the ninth grade for English, they had to bring in something that was written, and she asked if she could bring in part of my story. And, of course, she asked me, too. And the teacher wanted to read it, and I'm thinking, oh, God, you know. And so she read it, and she said, Jada, that's my granddaughter's name, she said, I want you to read it to the class. And she said, what? She said, it's very good. You need to tell your grand.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's
great.
Very good. So she read it. And everybody clapped. They just love it. And she said, you know, some of them had this look in their eyes, like maybe they really understood. And that,
oh,
you know,
I'm
she
sure.
was a ninth grader then. And, yeah, and I have it, and it's in plastic, and I never finished it. I mean, I could, but she goes off on this. I always want to go to Africa. I love animals. See, you can tell I love everything. But I love animals. I love the little babies. I love little baby pigs and calves and all of them, all of them. I just love them all. And so that's one of my dreams is to go there. And she does go there. She gets there. And she gets there as with her new husband, who's the man she was waiting for. And it worked. It happened. She believed, and it happened. They crossed paths. Anyways, but she has this ability with animals, but she didn't know it before. I'm telling you the whole story, but she didn't know it before until she arrived, and she she wandered away from everybody because she was so curious. And this is something that I would do. I mean, this is really about me wandering around, looking around, see what you can see, and not afraid. You see, and she's out in the wilderness here and the savannah where anything can happen. And she kind of gets turned around, but she's not afraid because she knows some way something is going to help her. And sure enough, she sees some animals coming at her. She's not afraid. It was a lion. She just stands there because you got to remember, she's got this very special gift, this ability, this sense to kind of talk to them. And they love her. Well, everybody's looking for her, of course. And they find her. Her husband's out there with the guns and all of that. Where is she? Where is she? And here I come, la, 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 with two lions with me. And, I mean, they're, like, ready to shoot. No, don't shoot. They're good. They're fine. And of course, they sit down. I even have the cover in my head, Dorothea. I know what the cover's going to be.
Oh, wow. Well, you've got to finish that. I'm a writing coach, so if you want to talk about it, I'd love to talk to you.
Oh, that's probably what I'm
get
yes,
into the other side.
Yes, you see, you have an understanding of what I feel and that this is not a joke. Who I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful. I mean, because what you could do is encourage me. I mean,
yeah,
because
I'd love to do that. So
yeah,
you have my,
and this
I
is
think
it's
my,
light, and it's a nice feeling. It's a feel good thing, and it's good for everybody to read once, because it has this wonderful ending. And you know, it's not doom and gloom, which I'm not about. And my granddaughter's always saying, "When are you going to finish that story? When are you going to finish it? Are we going to get published?" She said. She's so cute.
Oh, that's beautiful. You can dedicate it to her.
I would. Oh, I would. I would. I would. See, you already know what
I'm
about.
You could give me a call, and I would love to talk with you or email you.
I will. This is going to give me the encouragement I need. And, you know, part of it, Dorothea, is because of your book. I mean, I've never told basically the whole story. I mean, there's other parts in it. You know, it's just not all happy-go-lucky little girl in there or woman in there. But, I mean, there's ups and downs. But for the most part, it's going to make you smile and feel really good. And maybe you'll have a little tear in your eye because that's what it's going to do to you. But it's your book.
Yeah.
It's your book that pushed me to tell you about it.
Oh,
I love that cover.
Me. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have a friend.
Never know.
I have an actress friend. And she was in Jurassic Park as a child. And later on, she was in the movie Born Free. Do you know the movie Born Free?
Sure. Oh, sure.
And so she was in Born Free, too. And so she had to interact with a lion. And they were in, I think they're, I'm not sure which African country, maybe Uganda, but I'm not sure which African country. But anyway, so they went to this wildlife place where she was going to learn how to get in touch with this lion who was partly tamed. And she is a beautiful artist. And she sat outside the lion's cage for a month. And every day she would go and draw pictures of the lion. But she felt in her heart she was communicating with the lion.
Oh, yeah.
And then one day, she said she was ready. And this is all true. They put a chair inside the lion's cage. And she went into the lion's cage and sat in the chair. And the lion came and laid down by her. This is true. Laid down at her feet and put its head in her lap.
I have another story in my head, too. It's called The Lioness. L-Y-O-N-E-S-S, The Lioness, yes. Another woman that is really strong, really. She has gifts, too. The Protector. And, I mean, I could go on and on with that one. I mean, all I have to do is sit and type it out. It's just, but I'm going to call you. You know this now.
Okay, well, that's
everybody
wonderful.
Knows. I've got witnesses. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's part, you have to, I mean, I've had people say something to me, you know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? But I feel that we resonate with each other, and I feel, and I told you, I love your voice. I think it's very.
Well, thank you.
Reassuring, and it's like, there's just something about it in that book. Oh, my. So go and get the book. Please, get the book. I mean, just, you're going to look at the cover, and you're going to say, oh, my, I see what she sees. Once in a Blood Moon. And it was all inspired by a true story. And you can see on it the plantation, and it's kind of like where I live. I mean, I'm not on a plantation, but they're not that far from me. Because it's still, I mean, we have an old gas station here in town. We have a four-way stop. But now my city is the largest growing city in South Carolina. I mean, because that's why everybody wants to come here. Everybody wants to live here in my little city. And
well, what city is it?
It's called Bluffton, B-L-U-F-F-T-O-N.
Oh, okay.
And it's
okay.
About 20 minutes from Hilton Head. You know, Hilton Head, you've got to cross the bridge. Okay, well, we're not over there. We're on the other side. And there's just, this is a very inspirational place. I was probably here
life. I know that area. We were driving around South Carolina. I think fairly near there is a town called Bonneau, which is my last name. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just a real, I'm, you know, really telling all about the state, but it's beautiful, it's a beautiful state, and I'm in this little, my son was here first,
and
yeah, he was here first, yeah, he's like maybe 8 minutes down the road from me, yeah.
How nice,
so,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, but I probably, you know, I probably should get this fairy, I call it a fairy tale, because the stuff in it is like, it's kind of make-believe because you think, oh, this could never happen. But you see, Natalie thinks it can. You see, that's the gist of it all. I believe it can. And that's what I want everybody, that's why I want them to believe, yeah, because it's very, very important. If you go, I'm following you on Instagram, by the way.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm trying to figure out how to manage Instagram, just to let you know, I'm a beginner on Instagram, but
well, I can show you the way there. Of course, I have Candy in my chat room here. Candy is the one that does all the marketing and all that, and she's there, and she, if I don't know something, I can show you how to do that. I'm computers.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
You know,
I know that. My son knows cell phones. Oh, she has a question. She said, having 7 children, 1 with Down syndrome and 2 having already passed, have you had a good support system? Oh, she's probably got support that you can't see, Candy. How did you do all that?
Well, I guess I've always felt that God was my support system, and that's been consistent through my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe things happen in the right time for a reason.
That's right.
So,
you believe, you see? Yes, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's,
yeah,
it's
but
important.
Of course, my sons, my family is wonderful. Yeah.
Now she's got your answer, but she did all the posts on Facebook. She does Twitter. She does Instagram. I do my Instagram, if you see pictures of, like, the deer and stuff like that.
Forward to it.
Yes, I will send you a message so that you know it's me. And
wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, I just love doing things, and I don't want it to end for a very, very long time, and I'm waiting for the fairy tale to come true.
Well, okay, Natalie, one of the things that a writing coach does is create a timeline. So would you like to make this your 2021 project to finish your fairy tale?
Well, I would love
and
that, yes.
Okay, shall
get
we
it
commit
out
to
there.
That on the air? Shall we
yes.
commit to that on the air?
All yes.
right.
And
all
Dorothea
right,
is
wonderful.
Going to be my writing coach. There you go.
Wonderful.
My mentor. I love it. I'm happy.
Well, it's wonderful. I love your ideas. And it's very exciting, and it's very important for people to understand the power of belief. So,
right. I do it. I mention it all the time in my Instagram, I have these little quips in there that I put. Those are mine. I don't do them all the time, but the believe one I do. You must believe. That's it. That's what I'm going to tell you. You can't expect something if you don't believe. And I
yeah.
see belief in either purple, a deep purple, or blue, like my other site. That's how I see
uh-huh.
it. And so that's strength. That's energy. That's powerful. That is just so spiritual, what I see. And that's what I want everybody to do. And I have a lady that's listening. She listens every week, and she's going to give me a little... She gives me a little talk. Oh, you did an awesome job. Oh, this lady is so wonderful, and all of that. I bet you any money she's going to be typing to me any minute, and she'll always say, you did a good job. Boy, you two clicked. I'm glad you – she's going to tell me, I'm glad you found somebody to help you get this book out.
Yes.
Oh, my granddaughter
well,
Natalie, will be so
thank
excited.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. What's your granddaughter's name before we –
Oh, her name is Jada. Jada.
Jada. Beautiful name.
Jada. Yes. Yes.
And she's how old now?
She's 16.
16.
But she's just she's like I am, Dorothea. She's like I am. I mean, we'll have little talks when she comes over. She'll tell me she's seen things. We have those kind of little talks. Oh yeah, she likes me to read to her too.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I asked her one day. I said, "Why?" Because she said, "You kind of, if there's dialogue, you're kind of like, you know, you talk like the person is here. You don't just like a monotone and like that." She says, "You just you have spirit with it." She said, "I guess that's the word. It's just." It's feel good, even if it's not a good story or something. You just make me want to listen to you. She said, I told my teacher one time, you should have my grandmother come up and read to your group.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. What a great connection.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But look at the connection we just made. Anyways, I'm going to close the show out, and I want to thank Candy, of course, for all that she does. Because she's the one that puts up the show page and all of that, and we will do this again. I have to ask you, are you writing another book?
I am writing a memoir about my son Dave, who passed, who had Down syndrome, and he was a wonderful, shining soul, and I want people to know about him.
I agree. I like to hear things like that. See, I like, because other people don't know what it's like. How would they know? And if you have a story to tell, and it's not really a story, it's real. It's real.
He taught me from example about loving unconditionally, really, and taught a lot of people. In fact, today I got an email from someone who I had taught in eighth grade in 1997, writing to me saying they remembered my son Dave, who had influenced their life and brightened it up. So that was a real incentive to keep going with my memoir.
Isn't that wonderful?
I got that today. Yeah. So.
Oh, that's just a wonderful. I mean, yeah, you know, we all have so many things that we can share, and to know that you're gonna make it through all of this. We will. You have to believe. That's it. There's just no other way.
Well, I am really excited to look at your Instagram.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to send you a message so you know it's me. And I will email you, and I will exchange phone numbers and all that. And I have to put my magazine up, and then I'm trying to learn how to do this. It's a flip book. I want to transfer the magazine into an actual looking, well, not an e-zine, but a magazine on my website, on its own, you know.
Oh,
it's not
beautiful.
That simple. Oh, well, it is. Oh. It is. If I could, you know, but, you know, I tell everybody, I'm a real schmoozer. I've got these people on this one site answering everything that I ask them, but I kind of play a little dumb. You know, well, how do you do that? Gee, I, you know, like table of contents and all of that. And, oh, I'll show you. And they show me everything.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I have that ability, too. It's funny. But I wasn't like this when I was a little girl, though. See, I was really quiet. I couldn't.
But you were absorbing.
I was absorbing a whole lot. You got that right. So. Okay, I'll send you an email, and, oh, wait a minute. Oh, we get to see a book excerpt of Once in a Blood Moon in January Mystic Living today. I don't know, Dorothea, if Helen sent me anything. I think what we should do is I'm going to email you. Maybe you can just send a little excerpt of the book, and I'll get the cover, and I'll put it in the January issue. How about that?
Oh, that would be beautiful. I can send you a copy of the cover and a little excerpt.
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
I'll send you an email tonight, and we'll be good to go. And now, okay, well, we're going to kind of call it a night. I had a wonderful time talking to you. Oh, my goodness. And I'm sure all the listeners enjoyed it. I hope they did. And so I'm going to end the show like I always do. And I want to wish everybody a Happy New Year because it's coming up. And 2021 will be much, much better. I guarantee it. I just guarantee it. And I guess we'll have a show next year, it's called. And let me see, what is the date going to be? It's going to be, January 6th, and it will be about angels. So anyways, with that, I'm going to say good night. And I love you, Dorothea. I will be calling you.
I love you too, Natalie. Thank you so much.
Okay. Now, we end the show always the same way, and that is to believe in things you cannot see because they really are there. And with that, I'm going to play Candy's music here. Oh, this is our song. She's already posted it. Dance Party. Dance Party. I got to find this little thing. It's called Free to Love. You probably will like this too, Dorothy, because it's free to love. You can love anybody at any time. So here we go. Good night.
Good night.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitations, discrimination, this world could show up.